Taylor et al. versus Greystone Homes, David Wilson, Obama Council, Melissa H. Scott, Appalachian Council.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Dave Wise. I represent George and Crystal Tingler and their four children, and Bellmead Farm, the record owner of the land, of the farm, where the house was constructed. If all goes according to plan, I'd like to reserve at least 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll see how that goes. We're here on the trial court sustaining the demur, which in effect eliminated all claims for negligence seeking personal injury and eliminated all claims for breach of contract for economic loss. As to the first assignment of error, which deals with the source of duty, this court has ruled on multiple occasions that a single act or occurrence can support both a breach of contract and a claim for tort. And if you go back to Sensenbrenner, which was decided 31 years ago, it dealt with the construction of a home, including a swimming pool, and there were construction defects in the home itself. That was all deemed to be economic loss. What wasn't included in that case were any claims of personal injury. And I think the Supreme Court dealt with this issue in dicta in Blake Construction versus Alley back in 1987, even before then. That was a case in which they looked at whether there was a duty to recover economic losses absent privity of contract. And the Supreme Court then stated, and I do think this is dicta because there was no personal injuries there, but a duty to use ordinary care and skill is not imposed in the abstract. It results from a conclusion that an interest entitled to protection damaged if such care is not exercised. Traditionally, interests which have been deemed entitled to protection in negligence have been related to safety or freedom from physical harm. This court has ruled that where personal injury is threatened, a duty in negligence has been readily found.
And so let me ask you this. So yes. You can have a tort duty and a contract duty.
Yes.
You can have either or both.
Yes.
And our tort law comes from English common law. What English common law, or for that matter, any Virginia Supreme Court case interpreting English common law, has recognized a negligence duty in the construction of an improvement to real property?
Well, if you go back to, first of all, I agree that we start with the common law and how it's been derived, but if you look at there's the statute 8.01-223 in 1977, it says lack of privity of defense and negligence actions personal injuries is no longer required.
Assuming there's a duty of care, but the anti-privity statutes do not create duties of care. It just eliminates the defense of lack of privity.
Yes, but that goes back to the common law in terms of how they're trying to determine, is there a common law duty for a home builder to build a home that doesn't contain unreasonably dangerous conditions? And if I could give an example to put that in perspective, you're right, there's not a Supreme Court case directly on point, which is why I think this is a good case to be decided. But let me give you an example. We have a skyscraper, say, in Richmond, and it's starting to wobble because of building code defects, and if it crashes and damages other property, cars, perhaps persons, there would be a tort duty by that builder for constructing that building in an unworkmanlike manner.
I think give me authority for that proposition, either under English common law, which is the common law we've adopted, or the Virginia interpretation of it.
Okay.
Because the Virginia cases will all say, without qualification, caveat emptor.
Caveat emptor does not apply, Your Honor, in this case, because caveat emptor applies for vendors when you're buying a piece of property. You take it as is, and the whole idea behind caveat emptor is that everything is merged into the deed. Well, this is not a case where we have the land was Belmead's land. It was a service contract. And the case law that you can rely on is Kaltman. Kaltman was specifically decided where a contractor performed work on a home. He didn't build a home, but he performed work to a pesticide contractor. And although there certainly was a contractual duty, there were personal injuries sustained as a result. And that is the tort duty. And so the...
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Absolutely.
In Stewart, we held this. Quote, the existence of a duty to care running from the tort duty to the injured party was not at issue in either McGuire or Kaltman. In other words, there was no contest in either of those cases as to whether or not there even existed a tort duty and was handled on demur. And we held, we didn't decide the issue. Now, no one cites the case, but it's Stewart's 284, Virginia 282. So there is, so Kaltman does not say there's a duty, and actually it would be inconsistent with English common law to have said that. So your first premise is clearly right. You can, of course, economic loss principle has, nothing, as you point out, nothing to do with it. You can have contract and tort duties simultaneously. But when you strip off the contract, you've got to identify a duty and the source of duty under common law, and I don't see it in your briefs. Kaltman is your only site, and we held Kaltman didn't do that.
Well, actually, in Kaltman, you said there was a duty, a common law duty.
We said there was a common law duty alleged, and there's no contest to it, so we address another issue and let the case go. And then in the Stewart case, we flat out clarified that. The duty of care, the existence of a duty of care was not an issue in Kaltman.
But the Stewart case, Your Honor, needs a landlord tenant case.
Mm-hmm. And the issue there is, and in fact, it is cited in our brief that the context there is, does the landlord have a common law duty to avoid negligence? And if the law here in Virginia is if the landlord, in fact, undertakes repair efforts, they have a common law duty to do it right. And there is a common law duty on that landlord if any personal injuries result. So I would say that, to answer your question, another case that was recently decided was Abinan versus Concord, which is a slightly different case. You dealt with the source of duty rule, but there was no personal injuries. The question is, do you have a tort duty under the VCPA or a tort duty for fraud? And although if you look at Richmond Metropolitan, a lot of these cases that talk about fraud arising during the performance of the contract, if there is fraud committed prior to entering the contract, that is a common law duty recognized by this Supreme Court. Same thing, the VCPA, that creates a statutory warranty which can give rise to a common law duty. You are spot on in that there is not a direct case on point.
A statutory provision doesn't create a common law duty.
I believe the law, you can have a statutory duty that creates tort obligation. In this case, we are asserting claims for negligence, negligent repair, and negligence per se on behalf of George and Crystal and all four of their kids.
If all of the duties for the negligence to construct it properly and to build a door jam and a window jam that doesn't have water leaking, and the duty to come in and fix that if it's not quite right, arise from the contract, and there's no authority for a tort duty, doesn't that mean the source of tort duty rule is irrefuted and there is no negligence action available? In the same way than Isabel, there's zero negligence action available against a landlord for a dangerous condition that is unknown and unrepaired prior to the tenancy.
Well, in Isabel, again, you're talking about a landlord duty, whether they have a duty to perform repairs when they haven't undertaken them. The law is a landlord doesn't. But in Isabel, if Isabel had involved an instance where the landlord attempted to make repairs and did a lousy job, there would be a common law duty.
Only if there was a common law duty to do that.
Yeah, but I think if you go back to the what I started, what the Supreme Court said back in Blake Construction and Alley, it says, the court has ruled that where personal injury is threatened, a duty in negligence has been readily found. There are circuit court opinions. I realize that's not obviously binding.
So whenever someone's injured, there's a tort duty. That's common law.
No. There's got to be a duty that arises. And so if I'm a home builder, I guess the real question is, does a home builder have a duty in the Commonwealth of Virginia to build a home that doesn't contain unreasonably dangerous conditions for occupants, future occupants?
Okay. Give us a cite for that.
Well, there's not a Virginia Supreme Court case directly on point, other than the cases of Kaufman, again, is a pesticide contractor, not a new home construction, but is there really a difference between a pesticide contractor who performs his work in an unreasonably dangerous condition versus a home builder? And I submit that there isn't. I think Kaufman was spot on. I think Abinan was spot on, but it didn't involve personal injury. It defines what is the source of duty. And
We held in Stewart that the existence of a tort duty in Kaltman was not an issue.
In Stewart, Your Honor, is a landlord-tenant case. And it is far different than a home builder who undertakes to perform work. If I can, I'll save some of my time for rebuttal. I'd like just a brief on the breach of contract aspect. That is for the Second Amended Complaint, which is compared to the amended complaint. And I believe Greystone has conceded that the law in Virginia is either a principal or agent can sue. There's no question that we've sued in the alternative, which we're certainly allowed to do. And we've sufficiently alleged facts there's an intended third-party beneficiary. So I would respectfully request that the court overrule this decision, send it back, and if I could, I'll save the final 4 minutes on rebuttal.
You have 3 minutes and 57 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please take your briefcase with you.
Yes, I will.
And if you have documents you need, bring them out outside your briefcase.
Yes.
Go ahead.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Katz, and I'm here on behalf of the Appalee Greystone Homes. It's our position that the trial court properly sustained the demurrers in this case because the appellants could not state a cause of action for any negligent claim. Nor could the Tinglers and Bell Mead revive their contract remedies through conclusively asserting an agency relationship, which was contradicted by the contract attached to the complaint. As this court knows, this case arises out of a contract between George and Crystal Tingler and Greystone for the construction of a residential home that the Tinglers plan to live in. Under that contract, there are duties and obligations that run to both parties. Greystone's agreement was to perform work which was going to be of good quality and performed in a workmanlike manner. The defect in this case is a water leak. That was a water leak that the Tinglers reported shortly after moving in, reported about a year later, and then reported 3 years later. Greystone came out, addressed the issue, made repairs, but the repairs were ineffective. The original defect is the water leak. The plaintiff has sued for negligence, negligent repair, and negligence per se. As Justice Kelsey has noted, the source of duty is contract. The original defect is a water leak. The plaintiff contends that defect is negligent because it's not proper workmanship. However, it's a contract. There is no separate and independent common law breach that the plaintiff has alleged to give rise to negligence. And that's what we must have in this case.
What about, say, if a stranger visits the home and gets, you know, there's an I-beam that just falls and hits him on the head, or in this instance, the children who are not parties to the contract, and if they suffered personal injuries, does that mean under source of duty, they're out of luck. Do they have any kind of remedy?
They may have a remedy. They may have a remedy against the occupant, the owner of the property, the Tinglers. We'd have to know more facts. But what we do know in this case is that we have a defect that led to a water leak, that led to water intrusion, that led to mold. But the appellants never alleged that any repairs that Greystone made worsened the condition, that the repairs themselves caused injury. And that is a critical fact. And that is why the negligence claims should fail.
Now, counsel, your response to Justice McCullough with regard to the children, that requires more facts. This went off on demur, did it not?
Well, I was saying more facts based on his hypothetical.
Okay, well, again, why should the demur be granted as to the children? They were not parties to the contract.
Sure.
What part of negligence don't I understand that the children would not be able to maintain a cause of action?
That is a good question, Justice Mounds.
Thanks.
The reason why it doesn't matter if it's the parent or the children, it all goes back to what is the source of duty. It's a contract.
The children are not parties to the contract.
That is true. That is true. But there is no separate, independent common law duty that Greystone breached. Greystone went in there and they made repairs. Those repairs were ineffective. But nowhere in any of those complaints is it alleged that Greystone did anything to worsen the condition or that the repairs themselves caused injury. And
but
that is what is necessary.
Create the condition?
What's that?
Didn't Greystone create the condition with the original construction?
Well, that is the breach of contract.
The children aren't parties to the contract.
Is that a statute of limitations problem at that point? It's hard to envision complete strangers. I mean, here it's odd because they're family members. I get that. But someone who's just a guest essentially is in the same legal situation as the children, complete strangers to the contract. They suffer a personal injury, and then we say, oh, well, but there was this contract. I'm not sure I'm tracking.
Well, I think, sure, it depends on who has the duty. The occupant could have a duty. There's an injury in the house. There could be a statute of limitations issue. But in this particular case, the negligence asserted, you don't have a common law duty to create a watertight or waterproof house. You don't have a common law duty to remediate the mold. You have a water leak which led to water intrusion, which developed at some point in time into mold. That's what we know. But what the plaintiff has failed or the appellant has failed to allege in this case is what Greystone did in any fashion to worsen the condition. It's similar
to... Can I stop
you
for a second? Because it seems like to me you're kind of deviating from the question of whether or not a duty exists outside of the contract. And I think that was like his question. To me, and maybe this gives you, it'll help to answer the question, he talks about this, Justice McCullough talked about this beam falling from the ceiling and it falls on a guest in the house. Let's assume that it happens a year after the house is built and they found out that this beam fell because the contractor decided to use glue instead of nails because it's cheaper and the owner, it looks like it's got nails in it, right? They don't know. And so it just falls because he obviously didn't construct it in a way that would allow it to stay up but for so long, and it lands on this guest in the house. Do they have a negligence cause of action against the builder?
They may. And
what is the duty that might have been breached by the builder? What duty?
Well, if there was some type of defective performance in whatever they did. I mean, you look at the source of duty, which is contract, and then if there is some type of independent, separate wrongdoing, then that can give rise to a tort.
In Isabel, for example, we held that under common law, the landlord owes no duty, not only to the tenant, who is the party to the lease agreement, but to anybody else, the tenant's children, the tenant's guests, anyone else. There's simply no tort duty.
Well, you're saying that there is, and I want to know what it is.
Are you suggesting that there is a tort duty in your case?
No, I'm not. Actually, That's a good example between the difference of nonfeasance and misfeasance.
Misfeasance would be coming in and creating a trap for somebody, but nonfeasance is you didn't do the job you said you were going to do.
And that's why this case falls into the umbrella of nonfeasance. And why is that?
Because and so you're saying in one instance there would be a tort duty.
Well, if it's a misfeasance.
Wouldn't the
if it's a misfeasance, then right. Yes, but not if it's a nonfeasance.
Would the fact that the contract has expired with regard to the builder's obligation to make any repairs, 4 years later the builder comes in, attempts to make a repair, and as I understand the facts, does it poorly, why wouldn't that negligent repair, having assumed the duty that no longer exists in contract, why wouldn't that be a tort duty?
Well, in that situation, when you come and make repairs and they're negligent repairs, then that's a misfeasance. The Holland, right? Okay,
yes.
So we're in agreement on that. The difference in this case is that there are no allegations that Greystone went in there and the repairs they did made the condition worse.
But with that again, that doesn't go to the duty. That goes to whether they can prove damages, doesn't it?
Well, I think it goes to a duty. In the Holland versus Shively case, that was a case where the landlord, and I know this is not a landlord case, but a landlord doesn't have a common law duty to make repairs. Caudill versus Gibson, a landlord
said... But
if they choose to, then they have a duty to make the repairs in a reasonable fashion. But in order to find a cause of action for a negligent repair, you have to state facts to show that there was negligence in those repairs. This case is devoid of that. All we have is that
they said they knocked a hole in the wall and put the mold-laden insulation on the floor without containing it.
That's what they say. But there are no facts that increased or worsened the condition that existed. There are absolutely no facts that anything that Greystone did increased the harm or worsened the condition.
The tort during the tenancy, in the Isabel situation, the tort tort duty during the tenancy is not to make things worse. If you fail to fix the problem that you earlier screwed up because of a contract duty, that's nonfeasance. But if you make it worse, then you are liable, assuming there's no contractual obligation to come in and fix it anyway.
And Stewart, which
right.
Came out about the same time as Isabel, this court said common law duty not to make those repairs in a negligent manner, but that's making it worse.
So
and
if
what
you
I'm
don't
saying,
fix it, you come in and you negligently don't fix it, and the problem that was originally there is still there. There's no tort duty, but if it's there and you made it worse and there's damages that can be attributed to the aggravation of the worsening, then there is a tort duty, assuming there's no contractual duty to come in either on an implied warranty or some other theory of contractual liability.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. What I would say, though, in this case, there are no allegations that Greystone came in and made the condition worse. And that's why it's a nonfeasance and not a misfeasance. The plaintiff relies heavily on Coltman, and that is completely different because that involved an affirmative action of a wrongdoing where a pest control company came into a house and injected poison by spraying a harmful and wrong chemical that they weren't supposed to use in a residential household. That was an affirmative act. What is devoid, and when you review all of these allegations, there may be claims where Greystone cut out something and put it on the floor, a piece of insulation that had mold on it. But where in this complaint is there any indication or claim that that worsened the existing condition? If Greystone never came back to make any repairs, we would have simply a breach of contract, and that water leak would have led to water intrusion and to mold.
Which is why the aggravation rule is there, because otherwise you would disincentivize anybody from coming in and doing it on their own because they get sued for it if they don't do it right.
And then when Greystone came back, they didn't fix it. It was ineffective repairs as if they had never repaired it in the first place, but there's no allegations that the condition was worsened. If I may move on and address quickly the breach of contract issue, in this particular case, when the first complaints were, when Bellmead and Tingler first filed their complaints, there was no agency relationship pled. After the first demur was sustained in the second amended complaint, now we have an agency relationship. However, I would submit to the court that the appellants have still failed to, they have not pled an agency relationship. Attached to the complaint is the contract. In Ward's Equipment, this court indicated that you can ignore contradicted allegations if there's an unambiguous document. When the contract is reviewed, we have the owner as Crystal and George Tingler. We have the contractor as Greystone. There's no indication at all in that contract that Bellmead is, that it's on Bellmead's behalf. There's no indication on the contract at all that the Tinglers are acting on behalf of Bellmead. What we simply have are conclusory assertions of an agency relationship and no more. In the conclusions of law, this court does not have to accept that on demur. I would submit that there is no agency relationship pled, and therefore the trial court properly sustained the demurs to the breach of contract and warranty claims. I would also submit that there has been no, the appellant has also not pled an intended third-party beneficiary claim under the law of this court.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
Rebuttal?
You.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you allege allegations that the condition was worsened by the alleged negligent repair, and if so, where?
Joint Appendix 129 is for the amended complaint for George Tingler. There's also a similar allegation for each one of the other amended complaints for each child. And it says, as a result of the deficiencies and violations of the remediation repair efforts, water intrusion and mold growth continued to grow, and harmful and dangerous mold was spread throughout the house. It also, the there's arguments. Ms. Katz argued that there was negligent repair, focusing on negligent repair. And the case, Justice Kelsey, you had talked about, what case can you rely on. Didotto is a case that was cited in our brief on page 18. It's where this court adopted the framework set up under the restatement second of torts under section 223. And there, where someone who gratuitously or for considerations performs some work can be have a common law duty if his failure to exercise such care results in a risk of harm. Well, that's what we have here. We have a risk of harm from the original construction. That's when the builder originally messed up. He also came and made it worse by spreading the mold throughout the house when he did the negligent repair. All of those are tort duties. And the
You do agree that all your claims arise from Greystone's quality of work. Do you agree?
Well, yes and no, Your Honor. And it's yes, it is, because the quality of work was terrible, and it was negligent. And so, but the whole idea of a contractor performing shoddy work. Say that, like for example in Sensenbrenner where the swimming pool starts cracking and everything else. Shoddy work, no risk of harm to anybody, no tort duty. That's different when they build a home that's not weather tight, that violates the building code and allows mold to grow inside the home, a hidden danger. No one knows about it. It's not like the beam that's glued instead of nailed and falls on someone's that may be a hidden danger as well. A little bit more catastrophic, certainly, than mold, because mold, it develops, and these occupants, these young kids who weren't even born when the contract was signed, are breathing this, getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And so I think the...
You're right that the presence of a contract doesn't mean the absence of a tort. And likewise, the presence of a tort doesn't mean the absence of a contract. So the fact that the children or a guest is not a party to the contract adds nothing to the analysis.
Well, I think the contract and if you read the amended complaint, we don't attach a copy of the contract to the amended complaint. It was strictly to the second amended complaint.
And that's what's before the court.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so you look at the amended complaint without reference to the contract, is there a tort duty? And under the restatement of torts, there is a tort duty. Under the cases that even you had mentioned Stewart as the landlord case, Stewart was a case where the Supreme Court said that if you undertake repairs, a tort duty will
but
be readily found.
What's presupposed in that remark? If you don't undertake repairs, if you just did it before and you didn't do it right, and it's a pure contract duty, there is no tort duty at all.
Well, actually, there would be no tort duty for the negligent. You would have no negligent repair, but you would still have a tort duty for the original construction. The original construction, how can a home builder, you talk about, the Justice Powell, you talked about the difference between misfeasance, nonfeasance, and everything else. For example, every contractor who builds a home in Virginia is required to comply with the building code. If he builds a home that doesn't comply with the building code, is that nonfeasance or is that misfeasance? It is misfeasance. Because just because you don't do what you're required to do by law does not mean it's nonfeasance. It means that you have an existing duty. And if you create a risk of harm to occupants, to a guest who comes into a home, there's got to be a tort duty. And if there was a Supreme Court decision directly on point, I suppose I wouldn't even be here because I would have already relied upon that.
Well, it's 2019, and as best I can tell, there's no court opinion from this court saying that a landowner, or rather an improver of real property through constructing a building, owes any tort duty at all. And I have yet to hear a response to that.
Well, no, I have to, like what us lawyers do, when we don't have a case directly on point, we rely on other cases that this court has shown, like Dodato. I mean, that was certainly not a home builder, but it creates a tort duty when someone creates an unreasonably dangerous condition.
That's what's called a duty to the world. And actually, even in Quisenberry, we rejected that broad statement.
Yeah, actually, in Quisenberry, which totally different facts, but you start with the principle. If you want to rely on something, it's a restatement second of torts, which was adopted by this court. And I see that I'm over time.
You can ask a question.
Your time has expired, and the court will be in recess until 10 minutes after 11.
Thank you. I looked down, I thought I had another minute and 30.